This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Is there a place in a banking town for the creative class? That is a question some in Charlotte have been asking for a while, and the answer may be in the question itself. As banking changes, many in that industry are looking for new opportunities, and they may find them in something called fintech. Fintech is the intersection of finance and technology, and Charlotte's status as a banking center offers huge opportunities for fintech startups. So this hour, we look at those opportunities, why they exist here, what they may mean for our future, and why becoming a fintech hub could pay dividends for the region. We are joined by Hillary Burns, staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, who has written frequently on this topic. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Dan Roselli describes himself as a serial entrepreneur. He is co-founder of QC Fintech and Packard Place, a hub for entrepreneurs in Charlotte, and he joins us by phone. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. And in our Spirit Square studio is Chris Hart, Chief Technology Officer and co-founder and managing director at Level, that's L-E-V-V-E-L, an IT firm designed to help other companies leverage technology to their advantage to create new rules of competition using information technology. I have no idea what I just said. I took that from your website. Welcome. You can explain that later.
I can. My okay. Pleasure.
Good. I'm glad. And Joe Giordano is CEO and co-founder of Payzer. That's a mobile app and online payment application to take payments in the field and enable credit for a business's customers with instant on-the-spot approvals. Sound good? Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Great to be here.
Nice to have you here. Hillary, as I said, you have been writing about fintech for a while, for months. When did fintech startups in Charlotte or the idea for this banking town, that this banking town would be a good place for fintech, when did that all begin to emerge?
Well, I would say globally, fintech as a movement is really just getting started. That's the consensus. And I would say in Charlotte, it's the same. It's really starting to emerge. And companies, the startup community has been growing here for a long time. But in the last year, it's really been gaining momentum. And a lot has been happening, and a lot more people are talking about it and making moves in that space. So it's an exciting time.
And Dan, you are co-founder let me ask Chris this question instead of Dan. I'm sorry, Dan. We'll come to you in a second. But you are co-founder of Packard Place, and that's kind of an incubator of
That's actually Dan. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Excuse me, Dan. You are co-founder of Packard Place. So, Packard Place is an incubator for a lot of startups. How many of those that you're incubating are fintech companies?
Well, so in Packard Place itself, probably 10 or 20% of them. There's as many as 140 high growth startups in Packard Place. In our accelerator program, the Queen City FinTech program, those are all fintech companies from around the country and around the world.
Okay, so let's get a definition from the fintech professionals here. Exactly what are we talking about? Since I threw it to you for a second, I threw you a curveball, Chris, I'll throw you this one.
Sounds good. Okay. I think the challenge in defining fintech is that it is so broad. What you said at the top, where it's really the intersection of financial services and technology, that is by definition very broad. So that can mean anything from an app on your phone that helps you invest in stocks. It can mean a service for small businesses that enables them to get paid faster. It can be even as we start looking at the Internet of Things and increasingly connected devices, it could be a refrigerator that automatically orders things from Amazon for you. And, handles the financial services pieces of that for payments. So I think, trying to put too small of a box around it is where things get challenging. I think there's a lot of different ways that it manifests itself.
So it could be argued that fintech actually began with the adding machine that banks used in the late 1800s, and then ATMs would be fintech, correct?
Yeah.
These apps that you've developed, Payzer and others, which we'll talk about over the years that you've developed, they would be fintech. And which makes me surprised to hear Hillary say that this is a newly emerging technology, because I've been banking by Quicken for 20 years.
I think the one thing that's changed in the last 5 years is that increasingly the people who are making fintech, whether it's software or whether it's devices, are increasingly not the traditional players. And I know Joe has a lot of thoughts on this. So I think that's been the big shift. And I think it's empowering people who are entrepreneurs to get into the space that historically has been dominated by banks and other kind of traditional players in the space.
Joe?
Yeah, no, I look at fintech as primarily the use of software, but really all technology to deliver financial services. And what's going on is over the last, 20 years, you've had the rise of a lot of technologies. You know, you've had the miniaturization of electronics. You've got the internet. You've got the increasing capacity of the mobile networks, all kind of converging on a space that is ripe for disruption. And voila, you have fintech.
So go ahead.
And I think Joe hit on an important word, disruption. I think that this is about the disruptors, which many and most of those companies happen to be startups because they're nimble and able to come into these huge financial services companies and mix things up.
Yeah, it's a real challenge for banks to innovate around software. They're fantastic at a lot of things, managing risk and other things. But when it comes to developing software, it's not something banks are typically great at.
I'm looking at my phone.
Yeah.
I have 6 financial services apps on my phone, 2 from 2 different banks, 1 from a credit card, 2 from Google.
Right.
One being Android Pay, the other being Google Wallet. So these are all what we're talking about, some of what we're talking about.
Right, right.
And these were not necessarily developed by, say, the Bank of America or American Express. These were developed by startup companies or sometimes big software companies?
Yeah, I think you actually touched on it when you mentioned that 2 of the apps were from Google. And I think this is an area where you're starting to see more and more disruption. 6-8 years ago, smartphones were brand new. Now, smartphone companies, Apple, Google, others, are making applications for those phones, but they are embedded in the financial services space now. So when you can tap and pay or you can use a wallet application that helps you with loyalty, that's absolutely fintech, and that's an area that those companies weren't even involved in 8 years ago.
But why you're all 3 referring to this, and I want to leave you out, Dan, because you haven't gotten a word in edgewise here, but why are these being referred to as disruptions when it seems to me they are enhancements?
That's a good point, but they are disrupting the status quo in these banks. They're making they're making business more efficient. They're making business cheaper.
Good. Yeah.
And a great example is Wells Fargo. So we all know if you have an app with a major bank, the Touch ID is huge right now. Now they're getting iPrint scanner IDs, and Wells Fargo is launching their iPrint ID this summer for corporate clients. And that technology came from a startup that they incubated in their incubator class. So that little company that was developing this software, now they just got the client of a lifetime.
So Dan, in your incubator, these people that are trying to come up with new ideas and develop software in various different arenas, not just the financial services industry, but particularly in that industry, do they see themselves as disruptors or do they see themselves as offering things that are going to actually make the banks more money?
The answer, Mike, is both. I think when we started our program 3 years ago, there was initially a little bit of resistance from some of the big financial services institutions to go, well, wait a minute, this is disruption or this is competition. But I think very quickly the reality came that this is innovation. This is moving things forward. This is making the customer experience better. So, for example, in the Queen City FinTech program, Bank of America is a sponsor and provides mentors. Matter of fact, Joe, Chris, and I are all ex-Bank of America executives, for example. Wells Fargo participates, BB&T, Ally, Synchrony Financial, Babson Capital. You can go right down the list, and they all want to be involved because this helps them see what innovation is coming around the curve. And we had, I think in this last class, we had 150 companies apply from 30 different countries and half the states. So this is a great kind of radar screen for what's happening in innovation, and I think that's why they participate. They see it as a net positive.
So for most of us, our interaction with this technology is on smartphones and computers. It's to us, it would be the front end, but there are a lot of back room fintech things that are going on that the consumer never sees, right?
Absolutely.
Give me some examples of how this works inside a big financial organization, like a brokerage house or a bank or whatever.
Sure. So a couple examples. One is a space that a lot of people don't even know is going on, but when you open an account with a bank as a consumer, they have regulation that they have to comply with to validate your identity. It's known as KYC, or Know Your Customer. And there is a lot of innovation right now in the Know Your Customer space, where people increasingly want to open accounts online where you can't hand your identity to someone on the other side of the desk and have them go photocopy it or look into it or confirm that it's authentic. Okay. So, you know, this is an area where the consumer who might be opening an application online on their mobile app never sees that this is going on, but it's a huge opportunity for improvement in the back office processing that banks are required to do.
So it's all kinds of things. It's not just apps for the phone that these fintech developers are involved in. Who's driving this? Are banks driving this now that they've gotten on board with some of it? Is it entrepreneurs who are coming up with new ideas that are driving this? Is it, consumer demand that's driving this?
I think it's driven, you know, it's always driven by the customer first and foremost, but the entrepreneurs are really capitalizing on the opportunity. The reality is all banking transactions now are accessible to entrepreneurs through APIs or programming interfaces. So you can develop an app, you know, to run card payments. You can develop an app to initiate a loan. You can develop an app to run an ACH payment. And all of these things can be done by entrepreneurs to solve a specific need for a given target market. So the entrepreneurs are driving it. Mm-hmm. And to your question before, you know, banks that embrace the fintech community will see it as an enhancement. It'll be a new channel to capture deposit volume and loan volume. And banks that, try to thwart it will see it as a disruption. So it really comes back to the point of view of the bank, how it affects them.
Quicken. That makes the Quicken financial banking program also does mortgage loans now. Mm-hmm. They've done them for years, and you used to be able to get on the phone and talk to a Quicken loan representative. Now they're doing it on your smartphone. You can apply for a mortgage on your smartphone. That's an example of what we're talking about, right? But let me ask you this, in light of what happened in 2008, is that a good idea that you can apply for a mortgage and get one on your smartphone?
Absolutely. That's great.
Tell me why.
I would say maybe not, but maybe. But I would say the financial crisis did change the landscape. People didn't trust their banks as much as they used to. People still don't trust and think of the financial industry the same as they used to. So it is an opportunity for these startup companies to come up and say, we're new and different. Trust us. We'll do it faster. It's a new opportunity.
So is Charlotte, which has long been a banking center and at one point was the second largest banking center in the country. Are we particularly well positioned to be a fintech hub?
So Mike, this is Dan. I think there is an opportunity for that. When we started the Queen City Fintech Accelerator Program, for example, the first thing we did was got the big companies and the mentors. We have tens of thousands of potential subject matter experts. Take Joe or Chris or anyone like that. That's what's drawing companies here. This last class, we had companies from the Bay Area, Boston, Philadelphia, Detroit, Kansas City, San Diego, Atlanta, all fighting to come to Charlotte to incubate their fintech startup. Now, if we had said that 3 years ago, we would have been laughed out of the state.
And why is that? Because of the presence of Bank of America or the presence of the B of A plus Wells Fargo plus BB&T? Why is that in 10 seconds or less?
It's the critical mass of that. Plus, it's all the people there willing to be mentors. It's the subject matter expertise that's drawing people to Charlotte.
All right, we'll talk more about that when we come back as we continue our conversation about fintech and Charlotte's desire to be a fintech hub on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE.
Support for this encore edition of Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Levine Cancer Institute, part of Carolina's healthcare system, providing access to the latest research and clinical trials at more than 25 locations and expanding across the Carolinas. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, whenever we hear about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, we hear about why a person has been affected by it, the negative aspects of their condition, and about their struggle to return to normal. We hear less about the good that might result from a traumatic experience. Two Charlotte psychologists have pioneered research into post-traumatic growth. We hear from them about their work and its implications when Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, homicide rates nationwide are much lower than they were in the 1990s, but new analysis indicates rates are going up a lot in 25 of the nation's biggest cities, including Chicago, Cleveland, and Baltimore. What's behind this conflicting trend in urban homicide?
That's the topic of the Diane Rehm Show, ahead from 10 to noon on listener-supported Public Radio 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about fintech. That's the intersection of finance and technology, particularly technology startups, entrepreneurs who are developing technology for the financial services industry, and how Charlotte is uniquely positioned to become perhaps a hub for this and what that would mean for the city going forward. Hilary Burns is with us, a staff writer at the Charlotte Business Journal who has written extensively about this. Dan Roselli joins us by phone. He's the co-founder of QC FinTech and also Packard Place, which is an incubator for these startup companies. Chris Hart is CTO, that's Chief Technology Officer, and co-founder of Level, which is an IT firm that helps other companies leverage technology. And Joe Giordano is CEO and co-founder of Payzer, which is an application to take payments in the field and enable credit for a business's customers. Talk to me about what other cities have already made inroads as fintech hubs, because if people are coming to us from the Bay Area to be incubated, that tells me that there must be a weakness in Silicon Valley when it comes to this kind of technology.
Well, no, I look at it as an entire startup community, and startup communities all over the world are at all different levels and all different stages, I would say. And Charlotte's is still developing, mm-hmm. and fintech is a sector of the startup community here, and it happens to be such a large focus, I would argue, because of our financial knowledge as a city, and we bring so many people here to work for the banks. The banks train the people. And then not everyone is suited to be a banker forever. For example, the two sitting right beside me, and they go off and start entrepreneurial ventures. So it is a nice cycle, and it's a strength that Charlotte has. If that fintech is an area the startup community can focus and thrive on here.
And she mentioned this expertise. There's banking expertise. Is that what, that's what you're talking about? It's the intersection of bankers today or former bankers such as yourselves who know a lot about the industry, the ins and outs of the industry, and about finance itself, coming into an entrepreneur who has an idea to help them make it actually work in the real world. Is that what we're talking about here?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that you touched on, and Hilary touched on it as well, is that it's not really enough to just know about technology or just know about digital. When you're dealing with people's money, there's an expectation of security, and it's a highly regulated space. So it's not just about knowing how a bank operates, but it's about knowing what does the bank do, and they're very good at this, to satisfy all of the compliance and regulation and risk management that they have to do. And I think that's really the component that Charlotte brings to the table, is that we've got folks who have been doing this for decades. And the other component that I think is unique to Charlotte when you look at other cities that are big in the startup community is that here fintech is something sexy. It's actually something that people want to do. Whereas if you go out to the Bay Area, which has tons and tons of talent,
they want to do games.
Well, they want to do games, and you've got employers out there that are very attractive to go work for. It would be very hard for someone who has a great offer from Facebook to say, no, I'm going to go work on my fintech startup.
Right.
Lots do, but I think that's the one defining characteristic for Charlotte.
How do we compare in terms of fintech to other city and in terms of fintech startups and being a favorable place to start a fintech startup to other cities that are known to be banking centers?
Well, I would say, so I have a couple numbers. So globally, investment in fintech companies, fintech startups, in 2014, it was $12 billion globally.
Wow.
And that's up from $3 billion in 2013. So it's increasing a lot. So for Charlotte, we don't have the numbers just for fintech investment, but overall investment, Charlotte lacks investment in startups compared to other cities around the country. But in 2015, AvidXchange, a fintech company homegrown here in Charlotte, received a $225 million investment, which is huge. That is the ninth largest investment in a fintech firm in the world in 2015.
So what you're saying is a shortage of investment capital coming into startups in Charlotte. But if this, if the banks see advantage, and I get, the banks now have enough experience with financial technology, it would seem to me that they understand the pluses of this. Why aren't they putting a lot more money, particularly into fintechs in Charlotte, Joe?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I think the banks have gone through a tough period, and it, you know, may not just be the right, you know, hasn't been the right time to invest a lot in startups. But I think at the end of the day, I think the approach that works best for startups is if they're, you know, grown from the ground up by the entrepreneur. I think having them grow independently actually is the best route for success, and then you know, joining an ecosystem that you know is collaborative with the large banks locally would be very helpful.
Is this something banks are used to doing, or do they usually do things themselves? Are they used to going to outside vendors for particular products? I know they go to outside vendors for their checks for customers, but is this something they're used to doing?
They absolutely do use vendors quite a bit, and I think that there's a couple different ways of looking at the way that banks use technology and view startups, and it's been shifting over the last couple of years. So if you look at banks as a whole, I would say the top five or so are very good at building their own technology in-house, or they at least have a long history of building technology in-house. And after you get past the top five or so, it becomes much harder because the economics don't work to develop custom solutions, and that's where vendors play a much bigger role. And as a whole, banks across the board have made use of vendors over time. I think what has happened, if you look at the last 10 years, is that banks realized probably about 10 years ago that there was this threat from innovation that they needed to be able to respond to. And initially, I think the response to that threat was the idea that, well, we can be innovative as we are today. And some of them worked on that, and some were successful, some were not. And then it shifted a little bit to, well, maybe we need to operate in places where there are more innovative people. So we'll create an innovation center on the West Coast, and we'll go hire talent to help us with that. And I think what you're seeing over the last 2 to 3 years is that's playing out now, and that's difficult. And I think as the banks have realized that it's more difficult to find and keep that kind of talent, now they're looking more to early stage companies as acquisition targets or as partners, or as vendors that they historically would not have looked at because they were just too small.
Dan, I read yesterday that Atlanta and the Research Triangle are slightly ahead of Charlotte in terms of being ground zero as a fintech hub. We're used to playing second fiddle to Atlanta, I suppose. In Charlotte, it kind of rubs us the wrong way when we talk about the Research Triangle, but are we kidding ourselves by trying to play catch-up here? Or do we have resources that could ultimately, if we use them properly, enable us to surpass those areas?
Yeah, Atlanta has certainly done a great job in the last decade of kind of as a community coming together. I'm not sure I'd characterize the triangle of ahead of us, at least in fintech.
Okay.
One of the things that we should talk about for a second, and Chris can talk about this more too, about a year and a half ago, there was a civic movement to put Charlotte on the map as a fintech innovation hub that needs to draw upon all the assets of the community. So it started under Mayor Klodfelter's leadership. Mayor Roberts has picked up that banner, but Kathy Basson from Bank of America is involved, Wells Fargo, Ally, all those people, Diane Murray from Ally, Dean Deng from UNC Charlotte, Bob Wilhelm. And so we have this consortium of people trying to lay out the roadmap of what fintech looks like for Charlotte 5 years, 10 years down the road, and how that becomes an economic development engine for the region. So I think we said a couple of times, we have the right raw material sitting here, and it's starting to come together, but there needs to be a master plan using fintech for economic development for our region, and that is in process and happening.
And it may have been you, Dan, who described Charlotte's story as a tale of two cities, old school bankers and new creative class individuals. And you've been trying, and all the people in this room, except for Hillary, who's a journalist and not trying to do anything but report, but you've been trying to put these two groups together. And these two groups together seem like oil and water to me. You got these funky creative people, and you got these conservative, button-down, straight-laced bankers. How's that working out?
You know, I think it works out better than people would think it would work out. I'm a former member of the operating committee of Bank of America, and now one of the more prominent fintech entrepreneurs in town. Same with Chris Astori and Joe's. You are seeing Charlotte being a net importer of intellectual talent that's now staying and doing the innovation side of fintech. I was just with Mayor Roberts on a trip to Microsoft last week. We're talking about fintech innovation, how to happen. It's going to be on the Chamber Miami Inner City Visit agenda later this week. You are seeing that starting to happen, but it takes deliberate and focused effort and leadership. And we're getting that from Mayor Roberts, from Bob Morgan at the Chamber, from Bob Wilhelm at the university. This will happen for Charlotte. Matter of fact, that was Kathy Bisson's quote at the next bank event and our demo day. Charlotte will be a fintech innovation capital.
We are not home to a lot of scrappy young startup banks. We're home to some of the biggest banks in the country. So that means you've got really conservative, cautious, fiduciarily responsible, one would hope, fiduciarily responsible individuals running these enormous conglomerate banks. And then you got these scrappy little individuals who are trying to come up with products and services for these banks who think very differently. And both of you, all three of you, have migrated from the banks into this universe. How difficult a transition was it for you?
So I think it's a different transition for everyone, and everyone's built differently. So for some people, it's easier. For some people, it's harder. I think that to your previous comment about buttoned up bankers and people who are very risk averse. Of course, banks need to be risk averse. That's their job. But I do feel like there are more people in those banks who are part of that creative class that you referenced, the people who want to do things differently, who want to be able to do controlled experimentation and take calculated risks and do things differently. And I think a lot of those folks may just feel like the industry, not the company, but the industry as a whole is too constraining. And that's how you end up with people like Joe and Dan and me. But when you get out of that environment, I think it is very refreshing to realize that you can do things differently, you can experiment, and that comes with pros and cons. It's great to control your own destiny, but it's also you lose all of those guardrails that you were just accustomed to.
You have plenty of tremendously talented and creative people in banks. I think the challenge is you have to fund yourself for a period of time while you prove.
Like 3 years, I understand.
Yeah, in my case, 3 years. hopefully it's faster for others. But you have to get over that hurdle. And the reality is that's very difficult for. So it's not a shortage of talent. It's that challenge of getting over the initial proof of concept of a new product and that the market is big enough to matter.
But are not software developers dreamers, and are not entrepreneurs risk takers?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So bankers don't strike me as dreamers nor risk takers.
Well, there's all kinds of folks in the bank. I think it's you have to be careful in terms of how you label folks. I met and worked with many people who have what it takes to start businesses.
But I take it that your interface with the technology side of all of this, I'm sure you know about it yourself, but these people who are software programmers, et cetera, are doing what you want to do, speak a different language. How difficult is it to
I think that's the part that I was referring to earlier about the unique component that Charlotte has. The part that I think most developers who have not worked at a bank or not worked in financial services have is that they lack the context for the regulatory environment and how complicated that is. And it's something that's very difficult to learn. Software developers have it easy in some ways, because if you want to learn a new programming language or if you want to learn about some new technology, you can go online and you can read all sorts of free resources about it. It's a lot harder to familiarize yourself with how do I comply with Reg E that handles electronic payments in the banking space, or how do I comply with the Truth in Lending Act? I mean, it's a much more difficult topic to just figure out on your own, and I think that's what we have.
So, Dan, when at QC FinTech or at Packard Place, are former bankers or people who are bankers today who want to get out of banking per se and into something more adventuresome like this, are you hooking them up with technologically savvy people, or are they already technologically savvy people and they simply want to find somebody who can do the coding?
No, the answer is a little bit of both. Our founding teams now tend to be one kind of business founder and one kind of technical co-founder, and we're getting better and better companies in. But again, the reason they come here is the subject matter expertise. I think we now have 300 plus mentors in our database. For example, Chris and Joe, as successful entrepreneurs, have both mentored companies out of this last class that came in. And so you have mentors that are in regulatory, that are in payments, that are in every conceivable niche you would need in financial services. And we have access to them in Charlotte. It's part of the Charlotte mantra of, I want to be able to give back. I want to be, and while some of these people may be in banks that are more conservative, to Joe and Chris's point, this is an opportunity for them to express their creativity. Come be mentors. Come be involved with these startups without having to leave their day job. We found just a tremendous amount of people that want to do that because it's exciting and interesting for them.
And I would add, just so I cover banking and entrepreneurship, so I agree with you that the difference between the two and the similarities that continue to emerge are so interesting. And the banks, though, are really technology companies today. So I think that that is one thing also driving this movement is that so many, Bank of America, Kathy Bessant, who oversees technology for Bank of America, oversees 100,000 employees, just short of that. That's a lot of people. That's larger than Oracle.
Wow.
And so these people already have a technology background. And as Chris was saying, it's in the financial context.
Her name has come up several times already in this conversation. She's Chief Operations and Technology Officer at Bank of America. And she says, as somebody referred to a moment ago, that a fintech hub for Charlotte will happen. There's no doubt in her mind. Is she an innovator? Is she pushing a big boulder uphill within her bank, or is Bank of America on board cautiously or otherwise with this revolution?
She actually said that when I interviewed her at the Next Bank conference, and she really is driving innovation at Bank of America. She's responsible for it. And in her eyes, Bank of America is a great place to work for a technologist because they are embracing technology. It's one and the same with finance today.
And don't they have to? They don't, Wells Fargo will, or Citibank will, and that'll give them a leg up. They need to be pushing the borders.
They're constantly innovating, yes.
So they have to be on board with this, right? Would the Bank of America like for the city of Charlotte to be a financial hub? Wouldn't it be convenient for them?
It would be convenient because they are looking for vendors all over the place, and they have a very large workforce here. So it would be convenient to have people right here to work with.
So Mike, put it in the context of a banker and risk, right? Programs like the QC FinTech program, like the Mayor's Initiative, making Charlotte a FinTech innovation hub, is in itself a risk mitigation strategy. It keeps them from being blindsided. It keeps them from having to in-house all these kind of risky startups, regulatory issues. Let the startup go blow itself up if it has to in a regulatory environment. Let's wait till it grows up, figures out the regulatory issues, and then we can partner and connect. It's a really smart risk mitigation and innovation strategy for them.
And Hillary, you quote Kathy Bessant in the Business Journal as saying that cities with a great fintech presence are just more exciting and innovative naturally. Does she say why?
No, but I think if you look at cities around the country with big startup communities in general, they are more creative, innovative, and exciting. I think many people could argue.
Those are words I never thought I would hear come from a banker. We need more excitement and innovation. We have to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about FinTech and Charlotte as a FinTech hub when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Malak Jewelers, the diamond specialist at the Arboretum, a direct diamond importer dedicated to teaching customers about diamonds and fine jewelry to make an educated decision, malakjewelers.com. And from Central Piedmont Community College's Collegiate Test Prep, offering evening LSAT exam preparation classes starting October 3rd at CPCC Central Campus. Details at collegiatetestprep.com. Coming up in 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show, homicide rates nationwide are much lower than they were in the 1990s, but new analysis indicates that murder rates are rising significantly in 25 of the nation's largest cities, including Chicago, Cleveland, and Baltimore. What's behind the conflicting trends in urban homicide? That's the topic of The Diane Rehm Show ahead at 10 o'clock. When you break it down, the 10-year voting process doesn't seem very democratic.
this vote that nobody is accountable for, that's completely anonymous, and that no one has to explain.
I'm Molly Wood, one company helping minorities navigate the process. Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Charlotte as a fintech hub, which makes sense because we're a banking center and technology and banking come together in fintech. We're just trying to get the critical mass of technology people here, and that seems to be happening slowly but surely. Hillary Burns has been writing about that in the pages of the Business Journal for quite a while. She's with us. Dan Roselli is also here, co-founder of QC Fintech and Packard Place, which is an incubator for startups. Chris Hart, CTO and co-founder of Level, an IT company that helps other IT companies or other companies leverage technology. And Joe Giordano, the CEO and co-founder of Pacer. I want to talk about both of your companies now. You are the chief technology officer, Chris, of a company that helps big companies innovate like startups. How do you teach an old dog new tricks?
Well, I think there's a couple different ways that you do it. You know, fundamentally, when you have a company that has legacy technology that they've been doing it a particular way for a long time, what they really need is access to new technology, access to new talent, and also the ability to take those new things and add them to their existing talent base, to their existing technology in a way that helps drive innovation, that speeds up the delivery of new products, new services. And so what we're really good at is we have the experience from working at large companies and doing these types of projects over and over and over again. But we also have the experience from helping early stage companies that are trying to scale and grow like those big companies. So for the large companies, we can come in and really help bring the best of breed of what's happening at those early stage companies with technology.
Is there a frustration level on the part of the technology? Fintech is the marriage of financial stuff and people with mm-hmm. technological stuff and people. So among the technology people, is there frustration because they have to deal with corporations, big corporations, or they have to deal with, they have a great idea, but it's not going to work because of regulation or because of some conservative pushback. Is there a problem there?
Oh, for the employees, is that?
Well, yeah, for the geniuses making the apps
absolutely.
And stuff.
Absolutely. I think there's so many opportunities out there in the market, and you know, some of them aren't big enough for Bank of America to matter to Bank of America, but they're more than big enough to make an entrepreneur quite happy. So I think there's some of that. It's tough to get through the resource allocation process, given that there are so many opportunities across a big bank. So I think, taking innovation outside the bank is a great model, and I think it's the best model to really drive innovation.
I want people to know who you are and who we're talking to here, because you are also one of the chief architects. Let's start here. You've been working in fintech since before there was a name for fintech. You started working with Exxon in their credit card business. You were, I'm told, one of the inventors of the prompt at the gas pump asking customers if they wanted a car wash. That's an invention?
you could argue a small invention, but it was, something that, doubled car wash sales for the gas station owner. So some of these small little things, the best things are the simple things that are easy to execute.
So did that require a lot of software to make that happen? Because it had to scroll across the gas pump, yes or no to a car wash?
Not that much. I mean, the best products are the ones that require, in some cases, the least amount of software. So I think when you target a very specific need that's, again, big enough to matter, it can be very simple to get to market.
And you were also among the chief architects of SpeedPass, which was one of the earliest cloud-based wallets. Now we have Google Wallet and Apple Pay and Android Pay and others, and now Payzer, which we'll talk about. But are all those similar technologies? Was the SpeedPass similar to those technologies?
In many ways, SpeedPass was, foundational to all of the payment systems, all of the fintech payment systems. It was the first use of alias-based payments using a number other than the credit card number to actually process a payment for both you know, convenience and security.
We actually did a whole show on this and how secure these things like Apple Pay and Android Pay are. Mm. And they're kind of more secure, according to banks, than the credit card is.
Oh, yeah. They're...
So why are people still using credit cards? Why are so few merchants accepting Android Pay and Apple Pay?
Well, it's all about availability, and you know, the brilliance of the payment networks is that you know, they're interoperable everywhere. So I can take my credit card out and swipe it in 5 or 6 or 7 million locations and use it anywhere I go. So the challenge that any new payment technology has is getting that type of reach. So as merchants and retailers start to adopt the newer technologies, you'll start to see those technologies really take hold.
And you are also, let's go back to this Payzer app that you're helping to develop. Payzer is a mobile app, but it's more than that. So tell me exactly what it does.
It's a very simple way to, you know, for a contractor to do to run any sort of a transaction in the field that they need to run. So whether it's a mobile card swipe, you know, where you put a little dongle in your mobile phone and take a card payment, whether it's in check image to do a mobile check deposit, whether they're trying to enable an instant loan for one of their customers, say their air conditioner breaks and they have an $8,000 bill and they want to pay, you know, $200 a month for 7 years rather than pay $8,000 up front. We enable all of that instantly at the point of sale. So we help drive sales for contractors by helping them close deals with their end customers. And we help them get paid faster. We help help them, you know, collect from their customers instantly, right when the job's completed.
Is yours the only, for lack of a better term, app? I'm sure it's not just an app. Is yours the only thing that does that in the business?
Well,
because it sounds like a combination of a lot of different things all put into one.
We are the all-in-one financial tool. So our customers love us because they can get everything all in one place with friendly customer service to go with it. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just a much simpler, easier way for them to access financial services.
And in addition to working for Exxon, you worked for Bank of America, so you have a banking background as well. And you say that you believe that banking is transitioning into a software business.
Well, banking. I think, you know, retail. The reality is, retail banking is a payments business, and payments is a software business. That's where it's headed. And so if, you know, and it's a soft, I think we have to think of it as not one app for all, right? I think the days are gone when one bank can create one online and mobile banking application and have every single type of business and every single type of consumer use that app. I think the days are coming when there's lots of apps and banks need to think about creating an ecosystem where entrepreneurs can send them deposits and loan volume by connecting to their bank. And I think if banks take that view, they'll have access to all of the great work that the entrepreneurial community creates on their behalf.
So, Dan, in places like your incubator at Packard Place or at QC Tech, are the ideas for these new technologies, these new pieces of software, whatever it may be, coming from the entrepreneurs, or are they coming from the bankers who are helping the entrepreneurs saying, we need this, why don't you look into developing this? Where is it coming from?
Right now it's coming from the entrepreneurs because the people that come into the program already have an idea. They already have what we call an MVP, a minimal viable product, meaning they can be in market and get some real consumer feedback. We are in discussions right now with a number of financial services companies about doing the opposite, like which is starting with their needs and doing a call for entry for specific things. And this goes back to a little bit of Chris's work with the mayors. There's a couple specific areas like cybersecurity, like payment, that we think we can own in Charlotte within the fintech world. It's still a very broad world.
Okay. Peter on Twitter writes, many of the banks see fintech as a threat. Surely banks want this. Don't they see that it has great potential for strengthening their bottom line?
I think it's both. For sure, there are banks that see fintech as a threat. And I think one of the things that Joe touched on really highlights why it's changed so much. So the use of digital technology makes it far easier and less expensive than it's ever been to create new financial technology applications. If you think about banking 20 years ago, if you wanted to try to do banking differently, you would have had to go out and build branches and create lots of physical infrastructure, and now you can start up, it's not this easy, but you can start a bank completely online without that physical footprint being necessary. There's lots of other things that have to be done. So I think on the one hand, banks see fintech as a threat because it has significantly lowered the barrier to entry to do things that they historically were the only ones able to do it. On the other hand, I think banks recognize that the path forward for innovation is going to come from fintech. So being able to find those innovators early on and invest in them or acquire them or somehow harness that talent, that's the path forward.
And you say that banks need vision. They don't have the vision for this? They need to be coaxed into this?
I don't know that they don't have the vision. I think that in many ways they're working in an environment that's very much dictated by law, by regulation, by risk, by shareholders.
Yeah, and I think, not to bring her up again, but Kathy Bessant told me that there are three ways they work with fintech startups. They partner with them in the case of like an Apple Pay, they share the economics. They compete with them in some cases, and then they partner, compete. What's the other one?
You got me.
There's a third one. I don't know.
There's a third one. Not to bring her up again, but I'm going to say that she also says that large companies – like Bank of America, are not the easiest place to get your foot in the door. But if you do, you need to understand the culture of the company. So for people who are entrepreneurs in this fintech world, the idea that people from the Bank of America are coming in and becoming partners with you gives them a leg up, does it not? You understand the culture of the bank?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's absolutely right.
So that gives us a leg up then in fintech, because Charlotte is a banking center and people, we have this mass of talent here who understands the bank.
I think,
and Mike, one step further on that, which is each of the big financial services companies that sponsor in our program provide what we call a quarterback role, somebody whose role it is to help these fintech founders figure out how to navigate a Bank of America or a Wells or an Ally or a Babson Capital. They're very complex companies. They need a guide just to navigate the company and find the right meetings, especially when they're here for 12 weeks. Getting that done very quickly is really important.
For people who do leave the bank, either they're dissatisfied, they don't like the additional regulations that's come about since 2008, they don't like this, they don't like that, or they just want to do something more interesting and exciting if they have an affinity for technology. When they leave the bank, you're leaving behind all of the support structures, particularly at a big bank like Bank of America. You're leaving all that behind. What's it like to adjust to that where you have nothing, where you're running the copier?
I've talked to Chris about this extensively. He experienced that firsthand.
Yeah, I think it's really empowering because you realize that you're suddenly able to work on your own terms and dictate a lot of the path forward for the company. And on the one hand, you do lose that support network, so you don't have someone in finance who is going to just take care of all of the bookkeeping. You don't have someone who is an enormous marketing arm who can handle the marketing. But on the other hand, it gives you a lot of freedom because you're starting from a blank page.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, you said that you left B of A in part because you felt trapped by your inability to innovate. Obviously, you can innovate to your heart's content now, but you also didn't take a salary for 3 years.
right. And that's the challenge. But I think what it forces you to do is just be, you know, super good at prioritizing your work and everything that you have to do is important, but what things have to be done today, and you make that decision every day.
I think, Dan, you mentioned earlier in this conversation that all entrepreneurs, all startups, now I don't care whether they're technology startups or not, face the difficulty of finding capital. When you have big banks like Wells Fargo, Ally, Bank of America, and you're working on a product that's going to help them, are they easier to get loans from, or are you still depending on venture capitalists and or ma and pa and grandma and grandpa to give you money to run your company at the startup?
It's a great question, Mike. Most of our companies start with what we call friends and family round, people they know, before they move into angel financing. I think the banks are still trying to figure that out, and we're having active discussions with them about, you know, potentially creating a fund to help Charlotte entrepreneurs. But one thing I should mention, and this is true for everyone who's listening here. In our most recent class, we did a using the new law, the equity crowdfunding law, passed by or created by local Congressman Patrick McHenry. All the people that are accredited investors in Charlotte can invest in this class that just came in. And if they go to the QC FinTech website, it's one of the ways for all the people listening to get involved without having to take the whole plunge and quit their day job, but become mentors or invest in these companies. And that's how we think they're going to get their capital. We've raised, I think, well over $600,000 for these companies via the community, via this mechanism. That's really important.
And to add on to that, banks really aren't investing in startups very much. They're risky. They want to wait till they're more established. And I remembered the third. They are often customers of fintech startups, so that is one way to get your foot in the door.
What we've talked about bankers wanting to get into, what drives the creative end of this? Who are those people? Why do they want to do this?
I think there's tremendous opportunity. When a lot of people think that fintech is boring, but you think about how transformative good fintech is to people, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the entire application is fintech. You think about what Uber did for the taxi cab industry. Part of what makes Uber so magical is that the payment experience is completely transparent to you. In my mind, that's a fintech innovation. You go around the globe to countries that have not been able to develop banking infrastructure and branches and complex telecommunications networks, and they're able to send money using mobile phones. They've completely bypassed that entire innovation. So I think there's lots of innovation.
We have 10 seconds. What are the stakes here for us becoming a fintech hub? Big?
Huge. Yeah, I think this community has what it takes. I think we need to bring developers to Charlotte, put that together with the banking community, and we're on a roll.
Joe Giordano from Payzer, Chris Hart from Level, Dan Rosselli from Packard Place and QC FinTech, and Hillary Burns from the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you all for the hour.